It's 6 o'clock. I'm going to call the meeting to order. We have Townsend, Davies, Benning, Miller, Atkins, and Elliott here with Wade absent. We are going to, is there anyone here for public discussion that's not on the agenda? Seeing no one, we're going to go to our development items, case number SUB25-0009. Anne, are you presenting?
Yes, I am. Thank you. Anne Russ at Neighborhood and Development Services. As the chair mentioned, this is a proposed preliminary plat for the Sky Commerce development. It's a subdivision of 62.43 acres to create 5 commercial lots. This is the location of the subject property. It is located just west of the former Pearson campus, north of I-80 and west of Highway 1 Northeast. And for the minute taker, Commissioner Wade just joined us. Nope, you're right on time. We're just getting into this case. Here's the zoning map. The property is zoned intensive commercial. This was rezoned a couple of years ago. And there was also a comprehensive plan amendment associated with that rezoning. The area to the east is also intensive commercial, and then kind of the surrounding undeveloped land is all interim development zoning. So since 2010, and this case history is in your staff report, the property's been zoned and preliminary platted, I want to say, 3 or 4 times. The most recent rezoning was in 2024. There was a comprehensive plan amendment with that where the future land use map designation was changed to intensive commercial, and then the rezoning to intensive commercial followed that. That rezoning included one condition that required that the area be platted. That's why the preliminary plat is before you tonight. Also associated with that condition was the submittal of a traffic study with the plat. Here's a photograph. This is the end where Moss Ridge Road ends, looking west into the property. Here's the preliminary plat. I'm gonna show kind of a more zoomed in view here. But reorient yourself. This is to the top of the page is east, and to the left of the page is north. So if you can envision it, I-80 is down here. So it's kind of oriented different than the other maps I showed you. So you can see with this plat, they're going to be extending Moss Ridge Road to the western property line. There's also a north-south road that ends in a cul-de-sac at the center of the property. There's a couple conservation easements on the plat due to the sensitive areas in this area here and in this corner here. And then you can see the 5 commercial lots and the stormwater management proposed. As I mentioned, the comprehensive plan identifies this as appropriate for intensive commercial. In terms of subdivision design, I kind of already went over that. I did want to touch upon the cul-de-sac, though. Staff finds that the cul-de-sac is justified in this situation for a couple of different reasons. Currently, there's no street connectivity. The only access is via Moss Ridge Road. There's no frontage road along I-80 to the south. The street could not extend further south because of I-80. And there's also additional connections to the west are difficult due to the sensitive features on the neighboring property. There's woodlands and a ravine and a creek in that area. So staff finds the cul-de-sac acceptable in this case. It also meets the length requirement. It's less than 900 feet, which is a requirement of our code. There are some environmentally sensitive areas on the property. Woodlands, wetlands, a stream corridor, and regulated slopes. Based on the sensitive areas plan that they provided, staff can approve this. They're not exceeding any of the allowances by our code. They're retaining way more than 10% of woodlands, and they're only impacting 2% of the critical slopes when they're allowed up to 35%. There's no impacts to protected slopes, wetlands, or the stream corridor as part of this development. In the staff report that was published last Friday, there were a couple of deficiencies that were mentioned. One was there were issues with the easements. I think it was sanitary and water easements. Those have been cleared up, and those have been reviewed by our public works staff. There is still an issue with the fire apparatus turnaround. That still hasn't met fires requirements, so that still needs to be addressed. Despite those deficiencies, staff is still recommending approval of this plat, subject to fire approving a revision that meets our standards regarding the turnaround. So if the commission is comfortable with that, you can recommend approval to city council, and we can make sure that all of those issues are addressed before it goes to city council. Again, the main issue is the temporary turnaround for fire. And just to kind of show you what I'm talking about, it's in these areas. It's in these areas here where the streets dead end, and it's a stub. They're showing gravel turnarounds, which is not allowed. They need to be paved. So after a recommendation from the commission, this would go to the city council potentially on April 7th. And with that, I'll turn it back to the chair.
Does anyone have questions for staff?
So you are recommending, or the staff is recommending approval, and those deficiencies will be managed before it goes to city council. Is that typically how it's done? Have we had examples of in the past where we've approved something with some deficiencies and then it's shored up before it goes to council?
I don't think we've had that since I've been here. Usually all of the issues are addressed. And when we bring the plat, staff has approved it based on our review. It's not ideal, but I think since there's only one outstanding issue, and it's the fire turnaround, and we're not going to move. If the commission recommends approval, ensuring that the fire turnarounds are addressed, we won't take this to council until that happens. So it is not common.
Okay, thank you.
Is that the only issue that fire has with it? Have they reviewed the rest?
Yeah, that's the only issue.
So they're fine with like the cul-de-sac, or that's not changing. It's just would be paving essentially those gravel areas as like hammerhead turnarounds or something?
Yes.
Would the applicant, the applicant is on Zoom?
Yes.
Would the applicant like to speak?
Yeah, this is Max Eller with McClure Engineering. I have received the most recent version of the staff review comments, and I will agree with Ann that is the only item that I have yet to resolve, and I'll have that back in the city's review court this week.
Any questions for the applicant?
I don't know if this is relevant, but I'm curious, is there any planned development for these parcels, or is it purely just subdividing in hopes that to sell it off or develop it by someone in the future?
I don't know what I can disclose at the current time, but there are discussions currently happening.
Thank you. Billy?
Will those plans come to us after they're decided on?
No, it would be, they'll need to do a final plat, which would go to city council, and then all the site plans are reviewed by staff.
Okay.
The connections, I mean, off site, I mean, are there general, how do those kind of fit in? I assume that it connects eventually to the residential. Is that kind of the intent of kind of extending the roads to the property boundary?
The roads will be extended when the land to the north and to the west are developed. Okay. Whether or not it eventually connects with the residential area is kind of to be determined. That might not be the best situation given the intended uses of this property being more kind of quasi-industrial.
Mm-hmm. Is anyone from the public would like to speak on this? Do we have a motion from a commissioner?
I move to approve with the contingency on the fire department's approval.
Second. Townsend.
Chad, do you have any, you want to say anything?
No, I mean, it's kind of similar in spirit to the last time we looked at this property. So as long as the fire issue gets resolved, it'll be good to see potential development in the area. Hopefully it's a pretty simple resolution on fire access.
Billy?
Just that that's a large amount of acreage, 62 point whatever acres. I was just curious what the plans are, and I guess we don't know that yet.
Anyone else like to speak before we vote? Any discussion? I think we're good. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
I think we have unanimous all in favor.
Thank you. Thank you, Max.
Appreciate you guys setting this up for Zoom. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a discussion with the superintendent of the Department of Parks and Rec. Welcome.
Thank you all. My name is Tyler Barrett. I'm superintendent of Parks and Forestry. Just here to talk to you tonight about a little bit of the way we collaborate with planning with Anna and the rest in the office and how we coordinate things with parks around some of the areas you may be approving different things for in your time. So I know you've got a current plan that you either just reviewed or are still in the process, I can't remember, for right near Weatherby Park. I can touch on that a little bit as we go through as well, because it's kind of a good case study of ways we interact and work together. First off, kind of our process and Parks and Rec, myself and our director, Julie Seidel Johnson, we look at things from a perspective of what our parks and our natural areas, kind of long-term plans, tell us. So similar to like, planning has the long-term plans for the different areas. We have those planning, documents that we've, had help from consultants and had public, input on throughout the process. So we try to stick to, the intent of those the best we can. And right now those, would tell us, connectivity of our different parks and our natural areas within those parks is important for not just people, but the wildlife, you know, that use them, the plants and animals, on those, sites as well. We do have pretty good connectivity. A lot of our parks are along creek corridors, and the south side of town, especially near where you guys have had recent discussions of the development, is probably our best served area of town as far as parks go. Lots of parks in that area accessible to the public, not just used by the neighbors right there, but also the rest of the community as well, some of our larger kind of marquee parks in that area. We also prioritize high-quality natural areas, and along with that, larger parcels. We do have neighborhood pocket parks and spots, and those serve one purpose. But anytime we can add on to a park that's already there, that's a positive thing. So we're always looking for that as things develop around areas we already have parks. We also like usable spaces. There was a whole trend, early 2000s, not just in Iowa City, but in a lot of communities around the state and other states, where we became the guardians of water retention basins and things like that. And they were kind of called parks, and parks kind of helps maintain a lot of those. Those don't serve a lot of other recreation uses a lot of times. So we've tried to make sure those stay a lot of times the developer's responsibility or the homeowners association's responsibility, because it's really benefiting that neighborhood specifically in those cases. And a lot of times we can't get a lot of that other recreation use out of them. There are instances like in the future development on the west side of 218, where maybe a larger regional detention basin could serve as a nice big space and recreation area, fishing, things like that. So there are exceptions to that, but that's kind of the general kind of stance that we have. Something we like to follow that the National Recreation Parks Association has put out there is the idea of a 10-minute walk to parks. So we want to make sure we provide parks close to where everyone is for every neighborhood. Almost every neighborhood in Iowa City is within a 10-minute walk to a park or green space. And when you factor in the elementary schools and things like that as well, a lot of which have either green space and or things like playgrounds that can be used during non-school hours. We are pretty well situated and ahead of a lot of other cities in that way. So we're proud to have parks spread all throughout the community. In the example of the development by Weatherby there. So obviously you have Weatherby right there. It's one of our largest kind of neighborhood parks, if you will. It has a whole lot of different things in it and quite a bit of space too. So I know you're probably all fairly familiar with it, but for that park, there's a parking area which serves the neighborhood and others that come in. There is our largest garden space, community garden. There's also an edible forest. We've got a splash pad, a large playground, disc golf, a large walking path, sport courts for futsal and basketball, and then soccer goals there as well. So, and I may even be forgetting something. Oh, there's a bathroom, so that's always a good thing in a park where people stay longer as well. So lots of things in that park. And that was important to think about with this new development. We feel like it's a park that's of adequate size to support this new development and even future ones when you look at it in size comparison to our other parks and the amount of space that those serve. Let's see. Other parks within 10-minute walk of that development property, Sand Prairie Preserve, Napoleon Park, which has primarily softball, but there's trail system as well as playgrounds and shelters there. Terry Trueblood Recreation Area, which obviously is one of our largest ones in our system. And then Sycamore Greenway, also another nice trail and park space within that area. So like you say, the south side is pretty park rich. So it's a nice place for people to, as the new place gets developed, it'll be a nice amenity for those new residents. One thing I wanted to touch on with Sand Prairie is it is different than the rest of our parks in our system. We consider it, it's a Sand Prairie Preserve, so that name is a new designation, and recognizing as this development happens and as some of the other ones have around it, that the public may see park and think of it as like our traditional like mowed lawn park. Preserve kind of designates that it's a little bit different. And what I mean by that is it has Sand Prairie, obviously in the name, and Sand Prairie is the most sensitive of of any prairie that is left in Iowa. It is a very small percentage of what the original prairie in Iowa was, and we all know that's been down to less than a fraction of a percent, so this is even a smaller piece. And a lot of those plants and animals that are in that property and rely on that space don't really have anywhere else to be or to go. And that's that as the significance of the site is kind of seen through the history of the site. So Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation helped acquire half of that property that was then the city then acquired after that. So what Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation does a lot of times is protect land, and it usually goes to state parks or county parks, but occasionally city parks as well. So that really shows you that those in the conservation kind of industry or world were really knew about this place for quite a while and recognized the importance of it. So knowing that, we've been working with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on some planning for the site, really improving the natural area there. We've also partnered a little bit with county conservation. They have a vested interest as we may be able to harvest some sensitive species seeds off of that in the future as the health continues to improve, and then better prairies all throughout the region as well. And to help us with this, we've also had Dr. Tom Rosberg. He is, I would say, the foremost botanist in the state and a professor at Drake. He is completing a study on the site to really help us understand what's there now and the best steps forward with some of those management practices too. So he's provided some initial guidance. We've done some prescribed burns up there, some tree removals, woody removals throughout the site. So if you've been up there recently, especially the area adjacent to where the development you guys discussed last time is going in, we've removed a bunch of trees that were in a couple of old fence lines, neither of which were on the property line. It's very, very odd, but those were impacting the species that were still present in the soil and some that were still growing there. They were starting to shade things out. So we've been working to improve those spaces there. And the developer was worked with us to allow some access there, which was much appreciated. It kept our impact of the rest of the sand prairie to a minimum, as we didn't have to drive over the rest of the park to get to those spaces to do that maintenance. Let's see. So I know last time you had some discussion about kind of access to the property. Right now, there is unfenced access from the west, so the Gilbert Street side. So you can go around to where the trail kind of meets Gilbert Street there, and it's we allow people to go in there and use the space. I think in the future, there may be a potential opportunity for some sort of walkthrough space up from I think it's covered wagon drive, kind of where we have an access there as well. The fence there now kind of keeps vehicles off of there more than anything, just in case someone, tried to take something out there or whatnot. Sand prairies are pretty sensitive to compaction and that sort of thing. And as these developments happen around it, there's also opportunity to establish more burn breaks. So we do prescribed fire on these. So that means the exterior of the site, kind of the edge next to where fencing will be mowed fairly regularly to promote a nice break between the neighborhood and that space that we're maintaining. So that'll provide some future access as well, kind of a loop trail. People walk it now. We do have a few burn breaks up there in spots now. And you see people up there fairly often from the neighborhood that's already developed, either walking their dogs or whatnot. Kids build forts, all those types of things. So those are the main things for Sand Prairie, and I'll let you ask questions on that at the end as well. But I just wanted to kind of cover that on that project and all other projects. We work closely with Anne and her staff at planning to kind of dovetail our needs and what our plans have recommended and what the comprehensive plans for the different districts have laid out there. Planning's our conduit between the developers. We are also both working with engineering on a lot of these projects. So that project, for instance, there is some trail connections and things like that to Weatherby Park. So we're working to right size those and get them in the right spots, not to duplicate sidewalks and trails on the edge of that one. Things like that are all good examples. I also regularly work with Ann's staff with tree questions, things like that too, whether it's for a development, a large neighborhood one, or a site plan as well that requires trees. Let's see if I covered all my things here. I was thinking, as that part of town develops further, there may be a potential need for a smaller kind of neighborhood pocket park somewhere further south. I think that's probably a few developments into the future from this space, because, like I say, we're pretty well situated with parkland right around there. But as we get closer to, let's say, the soccer complex, and kind of as we build out that way or further to the east as well, there may be some potential need and a good place to put more conventional, typical park-like amenities in one of those areas. I think those are my main points, so I'm happy to answer any questions about either the development there by Weatherby and Sand Prairie specifically, or any of the other ways that we kind of collaborate on monthly, weekly basis, depends on what projects are going on.
I have a question about the parking around the park,
yeah.
Weatherby Park. Right now, if there's a special event, parking around there is horrible.
Okay.
So with this new development coming in, how is that going to affect parking to the park?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't remember the parking, how the areas right on the edge are going to be signed for parking or no parking. I think the roads are wide enough to have some parking.
Yeah, the streets along Weatherby that will be constructed with this new development will allow parking on both sides.
But I guess my concern is still at current, when there's a special event at Weatherby, there is really no parking.
Mm-hmm.
You've got two little spaces. And so is that going to be expanded at all, or?
Yeah, we don't have any plans to expand parking in that park now. I think there is going to be quite a bit of extra on-street parking there, because you have both the two fairly long sides of the park, the south end there, and it'll be the most of the west end of it as well. So I think that'll help alleviate a lot of that. It'll also provide more parking access for those who enjoy playing soccer and stuff on that south end of the park.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it'll be a nice positive. People won't have to walk as far either to do some of those things.
Okay.
Yeah, good question.
First of all, thank you for coming and making time. Really appreciate it. I think, from my point of view, I sort of asked you to come just to kind of get a better understanding of kind of those, early meetings that I think end up shaping things in a really important way. So just understanding how that works a little bit better is really nice. I think, our job as, on the committee is really to ensure that, the comp plans get followed. I did kind of read over the park's master plan, too. So I think, from my perspective, I just want to enhance the parks in any way, shape, or form. So looking to kind of collaborate or help, push that agenda and make sure we're following the comprehensive plan as closely as possible and getting, I think there's a lot of park talk in the comp plan as well. Accessibility, connectivity, I think are really important issues. The specifically about the the reserve. I was looking through the park's master plan, and I was a little interested just in how this particular, you know, approval last week was kind of getting pushed through, and that it seemed like a lot of it was getting covered up. So I was having concerns that we were just kind of losing access to that reserve, because it was going to be essentially behind people's backyards at that point. The park's master plan talks a little bit about that reserve designation, and it specifically states that it wouldn't be applied to the entirety of the park, just a portion of the park. And I think you talked about that a little bit. So that provided some clarity that there's still access. And I just wanted to make sure that we did retain some access. I think the other part that I found interesting in the park's master plan was it talks a lot about learning opportunities and, you know, public stewardship and just kind of bringing kids in to learn about those important ecological features that you mentioned. Yep. That are so rare. So I think from my perspective, I hate to approve a plan that's going to essentially make that an impossibility. So yeah. I think it's important to sort of all be on the same page and knowing the intent of that park. And it will be portions that are, you know, people are allowed to kind of come in and interact, you know, obviously not the sensitive areas, but maybe you kind of appreciate them from afar, birding or whatever. The one thing I'm kind of interested in, you talked about it a little bit, about the pocket park and kind of like how those conversations go. If you could kind of expand on that, because that neighborhood had a few areas that they sort of targeted as pocket parks, and the developer talked a little bit about maybe some city input that I wasn't quite clear on location and kind of what those looked like. So if you could talk a little bit about your interaction with developers on kind of guiding what those pocket parks end up looking like or feeling like, or, you know, if it's play areas or just planted areas.
No, that's a good question. And some of those depends on the development and the plan. Some of them are to be deeded to us in the future, and some of them aren't. So these and this development, from my understanding, are not going to be deeded to the city in the future. So we don't have much collaboration or interaction with the developer on those in that instance. But if it was to be deeded to the city in the future, so a good example is in the Peninsula neighborhood, Emma J. Harvett Park there. It was developed with the development, and then it became a city property once all the other requirements were met with occupancy and stuff around the park. So we had a little bit more kind of collaboration on a project like that. That predates me, but I know there from other staff there was you know, their memory and their discussions on places like that in the past. So that's only one example of them, but there's plenty of other little ones around. We should have a couple coming online in the next couple years. So in the Palisades neighborhood, so north of Dodge and kind of the new Hy-Vee up there, it's kind of actually north of the old Hy-Vee. And then Stonebridge Estates on the far east side. There's some lots that we'll have in the future. So those are spots that when those were planned out, the idea was to have the space as a deeded to the public as a park for everyone in the future. Whereas this development, essentially, it could be just for the HOA. Essentially, it's their or the developer, and what will be the HOAs in that area are the ones maintaining it. But it is still open space and whatnot as well.
Is that what considerations, you know, do you take into account when you talk about maybe having a developer deed a pocket park to you rather than just kind of managing it themselves through an HOA?
Yeah, so looking at what else we have in that area. So for us, a pocket park would usually be like something with a small playground, something like that. And since this one specifically is right between two playgrounds, a large one at Weatherby and a smaller one at Napoleon Park, there's not really a need or staff resources, time, and investment into like a playground or those features that we would have available to put into one of those. So that would be the main determination. In a case like this. Good question. Okay. And one thing you talked about, education of the site. I do think our recreation side of our department could definitely do programming of Sand Prairie. We've been in the kind of a constant battle to get it to a place ecologically where it's improving. So I think we're getting to that point where it'll be even more valuable. We did have a collaboration with County Conservation last year where they had high school students that were with them for the summer. And one of the sites they came to was Sand Prairie and helped us do some work there and learn from not only our staff, but Fish and Wildlife Service staff and things like that too. So I really think there's a lot of opportunities for that in the future, too. So you're right on there with that idea of education and whatnot.
Great.
Thank you, Tyler, for coming. And thank you for all you do to make our community a better place.
Thank you.
Appreciate the parks. Yep. Thanks.
Can I actually have a little bit more time? Just just because you came and we're all here. But just... accessibility and just access to the parks as well, I think, is a concern of mine, and just making sure that we're following the comprehensive plan in terms of bikeability, accessibility, and things like that. There's been a few projects. I'm thinking of one in particular that I know parks said they did not want to provide access to the park, and that's the development between Dodge and Governor.
Okay.
If you're familiar with that one.
Happy Hollow?
Happy Hollow, yeah.
Okay.
Where it was, there's essentially a very difficult condition where there's no way to get out of that development unless you would provide a access point through the park, which seems like it would benefit both the park in terms of use and, you know, enhance the development that's going in there, and that it now has a very easily accessible, well, I say accessible because that's probably the issue, but at least it has a bikeable, walkable path into that park and out of the neighborhood. I know that just reading the documents, that it was specifically stated that parks said that they did not want to provide an access to that. Can you talk a little bit about what maybe that specifically, but also what would prevent you from wanting people to access the park?
So it's not that we don't want access to that park and we're in favor of sidewalks around that park. We just are not in favor of a sidewalk or a path coming down that more sensitive slope that's still on private property there and dumping out in the park at that point. Knowing that there is still close connectivity for both that development and anyone else, if you go on the Brown Street side and the Governor side, having those connections are more valuable than just serving that one development there, because those connections will serve everyone else plus that development. Essentially, they would, from my memory of that project, they would come out the east side of the development and be right on a sidewalk network there that would then connect to the park. So that would be in keeping with the way a lot of our parks are accessible, not like right from the adjoining property always, but in close proximity to that property.
Is there anything specific that you would not want, like a private development opening onto a park? I'm just trying to understand if there's a reason you wouldn't want that, but just kind of easier so those people don't have to walk. You know, if they have a kid and they're living there, it would be certainly a lot easier to just walk down rather than having to walk all the way around. And there's...
Yep. In this case, it'd be that slope there and the way a path would have to go down that. It also would not be a city-owned path in that instance. The developer would be, or the whoever managed it in the future, that property would be the ones who are responsible for it. So the it becomes a little tricky if we have a connection right onto something like that as well. Maintenance wise, what they're doing, what we're doing, that would be a very difficult place to maintain in the winter as well for either us or a developer, because it would have to switch back a bit to get down that slope and do it in a way that provided ADA accessibility. So that would be the biggest challenge in that site there. Whereas the sidewalks around the edge kind of follow those street grades that are a lot easier to meet those standards, so everyone is actually able to use them and access the park in those ways. Yeah.
Okay.
I have one more. City Park has beautiful lighting, especially since Shakespeare Theater's there. Mm-hmm. Does Weatherby have that for the parking lots and for the trails?
It's a good question. We don't have any around the trail there, and I don't think, besides streetlights right outside the park there, that there's any right in the park. We like to, of course, provide lighting where it makes sense, but the parks are also closed at dark. Like the user experience, they're not benefiting as much from that. Then City Park has more events, like you mentioned, that go after dark, or like Terry Trueblood Recreation Area has lights. There's lights in just up here in College Green, because it's a pretty popular pass through. Even in the evenings, a lot of students and others going downtown, or over by the University Hospital, where you've got Brooklyn Park there. Mm-hmm. We've got that steeper hill that has a lot of pass-through that has lights. So those are kind of our main spots that have lights usually. And some of that comes down to funding and things like that for those elements. I know it was a big ask with our addition to the skate park that's going to be happening, but the price for those lights was just astronomical. They would have got lights, but nothing else essentially with that project. So it's balancing those things a little bit of, we do also get quite a few complaints from surrounding neighbors if we have lights in some instances. So we try to, be sensitive to that neighborhood and not illuminating things too much, but also having them in spots that make sense.
But you're about to get 200 plus units in that area. I would think the accessibility, I'm sure they'll be using the park a lot more now, especially into the evening hours.
Yeah, so like I say, after dark, they're not allowed to be in the park anyway, so that's what time our park's closed. So they're open from sunrise to sunset. So lighting could almost encourage people to be there after the park curfew as well. So that would be another consideration there. And there are no current budget plans either for that. So that would be a capital size project improvement, which in the next 5 years, that really doesn't have a spot that is set in the budget yet, and doesn't really have a spot in the way I'm currently thinking of it anyway, in like the budget realm of what is priorities. It probably wouldn't rise to that. A lot of our current projects or planned projects are things like rehab of bridges and trails and things like that that are currently there that we need to bring back up to standard so we can continue to have use of them.
Okay. Sorry, you said we just came from an event that Jeff Run showed the park or the skate park plan, and it seems like an amazing new amenity. Yep. But there won't be any lights on that at all. It's just only daytime.
No lights with that. We have it set up conduit wise for the future if we were to get funding. But just like the current one is that's there, it won't be lit.
Okay. That's nice. You're planning for it in the future, though.
Yeah,
that's
It's set up at least. So yeah, it was probably $500,000 to $1 million extra to light that space. That's just a guesstimate, but it was a large amount. Yep.
Do you do trailways and trails that does that fall under Parks and Rec too? Is that kind of
usually yes. Yep, at least. yeah, we have some help from others sometimes, whether it's with Public Works, with Streets, doing some help on things, but typically it falls within us, yeah.
And if that happens, like in a, you know, we, just because we have a lot of large scale developments kind of coming down the pipe, I know, and Ann can answer too, does that typically get deeded to the city? Like if there is, if this development happens to kind of connect a gap in trail system, bike system, does that get, does the developer build that typically? And then the city, it gets deeded to the city and they maintain it?
Lots of different ways it's happened over the years is what I'll say. There's some spots that don't have a trail on them yet, but there's a space for one potential in the future. And we would even work with another department on this with the MPO, on these types of things for connectivity of trails and whatnot. There are some trails we have that we maintain just the width of the trail, and the trail is ours to maintain through that. Maybe we're put in by the developer, but we have that responsibility. So maybe a 10-foot wide easement, and the trail's 10-foot wide. We have other spots where we have a little bit wider easement in the trail that goes through. There's other trails that go through essentially private property. So First Avenue Hy-Vee is a good example. The Court Hill Trail goes through that, but there was an easement to allow trail access through there. So whereas we don't own the land, we still mow a little bit on each edge of the trail and keep the trees out of it and things like that. So lots of different ways. The development, I think it's Monument Hills off of is that the new one where Buddha used to sit? that one, the developer was required to build it through to where it met the park, and then we connected to the park there with Calder Park up to Hickory Trail Road there as well. So lots of different ways it's happened.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
I think that's it.
Thanks. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Consideration of meeting minutes from February 18th. Do we have a move to approve, a motion to approve?
Motion to approve, Townsend.
Second, Davies.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Unanimous vote there. Anne, do you have any planning and zoning information?
We met today with the Comprehensive Plan Steering Committee. Commissioners Miller and Wade were there, and we presented some draft chapters of the plan. So we're getting further with drafting. We got some good feedback, and I'm sure there'll be more as everyone reviews it. But it was, I thought it was a pretty good meeting and some great input.
I really enjoyed the presentation, and I feel like it's moving in a really positive direction. I'm excited about it. I had a question for you just process-wise. So once it gets through the full process and all with the future land use map, would then the city need to like revise the language of each zone to sort of comply more with that before anything really takes effect?
Well, the plan would still take effect when it's adopted.
Right.
But one of the implementation items will be to look at the code and yeah, make changes as needed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Do you anticipate that being like a ton of work for city staff to go through?
Zoning code update is going to be huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. seems like it.
More than a comp plan for sure.
Yeah.
They don't take place every year.
Yeah.
As a committee, do we get kind of a opportunity to kind of review before, or is it just going to basically come?
It'll come to you. Yeah.
Just for approval.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it'll probably be several meetings.
Okay.
I can envision, like, I don't know, we'll have to talk to the consultants about this, but I don't think there's going to be so much in it. It's one presentation would be a lot. So I could see us doing it over several meetings and then asking for a recommendation.
And they're also going to present the draft to the commission before it's like up for approval as well, right? Or not?
The confluence?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. If we want to do multiple meetings, it may be staff presenting it.
Okay.
Because I don't know if we have it in our scope for them to do like 4 meetings with you guys. But we can figure that out. Yeah.
I think I just missed it.
There'll be at least one with the consultants. Yeah.
As things progress, is it, I know it's shared with the steering committee, is it also available through the web, through the city site?
We're going to eventually get there, but we're not quite there yet. Yeah. Yeah, and we will have some public meetings as well. So that was one thing. And then just there's no meeting, no second meeting in March this month. So we'll be back together in April.
I noticed after I asked that question, I noticed you have on here at the bottom, formal meeting, April 1st, 15th, and May 6th.
Yes.
So you have it spelled out.
Yes.
For people like me. All right. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We will adjourn the meeting. Thank you, everyone.